Hello and welcome to Diehards and Glory Hunters. We have another fan ready and waiting to speak to you. But as always, we'll kick off straight away with the scouting report. And this week, I've gone a bit continental. I've gone outside of the Premier League or even outside of English football for the first time in a couple of weeks. And I've gone for a player that, interestingly, some fans, and by that I mean a very remote band of Liverpool fans, will possibly remember the name. Or the name will ring a bell at the very least. And that is a player called Luis Alberto, who is currently playing for Lazio in Serie A. And I think he made something like 9 appearances for Liverpool around the earlier part of this decade. Did not make much of an impression, obviously, but has sort of had a bit of a career resurgence, or rather a career peak, at Lazio, who are obviously having a brilliant season in Italy, and I've seen bits of him. Really, he's the top assist maker, so he will, you know, obviously their season hasn't finished yet, but I'm sure they have a version of the playmaker award that we have over here, and he's on track to win that. And sort of his style is very much like a player who obviously has had a lot of airtime over the weekend, and rightly so, and that's David Silva, one of the Premier League's greats over the last 10 years. That is who I would describe Luis Alberto as being quite similar to, really. He's very silky on the ball. He can go past people with his dribbling ability, and he knows how to pick a pass. So it's a weird one, really. I'm not suggesting by any stretch that he'll be returning to the Premier League, because maybe he's just one of those players that isn't suited to the physicality of it. But he certainly made an impression in Italy this season, and yeah, all things but going well for Lazio, they'll be in the Champions League next year, and we'll see if he can make an impression on the European stage as well. So yeah, keep an eye out for Luis Alberto. Okay, so now that's done, we'll obviously talk to our fan of the week, and I'm pleased to welcome Michael to the show. How you doing, Michael?
I'm very well, thank you.
And as always, mate, who is the team that you support?
I support Manchester United.
Man United, right. Well, as we were just saying off air, obviously it's kind of good timing for this one, as the season has just come literally to its close. So I think the first question is, Mike, really, Manchester United's season up as best you can in a few words.
I think pleased. Pleased is probably a good word, because, you know, I think the manager will be obviously very pleased with the result. You know, our run since the lockdown started has been impressive. And obviously, I think based on that, I think we do deserve to finish where we did and obviously qualify for Champions League next season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think I saw the statistic that came up on, I think it was Match of the Day or somewhere last night, which is that I think it even goes back as far as when a certain player joined in January, that since that point, you have actually earned the most points in the whole league above City and Liverpool. So you've timed your run really spectacularly and came from miles behind to obviously overtake Leicester and my own team, Chelsea, by goal difference. So absolutely, yeah. Do you think it's a good enough season for Manchester United, and or do you think that it needs to be topped off by winning the Europa League?
Yeah, I think there needs to be an element of success somewhere, at least one of the competitions, which obviously you've just said, the Europa League. I think it'll be a very good season if we got top three and the Europa League. Obviously, it would have been nice to get the FA Cup, but I think that's a separate issue altogether we can talk about later. But yeah, I think successful season, I think Europa League and top three. Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we'll dip in and out of talking about this season, really. But I just want to take you back sort of on a personal level, and just try and think about why you started supporting Manchester United in the first place, because as I know, but not as the listeners know, you're not from Manchester. And what are your sort of first memories of supporting the club and watching the club?
Well, I was obviously raised in East London, quite near a town called Leytonstone. which obviously was the home of a famous football star by the name of David Beckham. Now, my family, obviously, they loved him. You know, he was the local hero, he was local lad. So at the time when I was watching football at a very young age, he was playing for Manchester United. So for Christmas presents and birthday presents, I had lots of United shirts and lots of memorabilia from the period. And I just remember watching them and obviously seeing my idol, you know, playing football on the telly. And yeah, I just stuck with the team. Even after he left in 2003, you know, obviously I was a bit disappointed with that. But I stuck with the team, and, you know, me and my brothers, we continue to support them to this day. You know, having different role models here and there. You know, Wayne Rooney is another example. Players I looked up at on the telly. And yeah, just ever since David Beckham, really, I've just supported Man United, and my love for the club really hasn't changed much since 2003, 2001.
Okay, brilliant. So I didn't know that, actually. I obviously knew where you were from, but I didn't realise that Bex had had such a sort of impact, really. It's funny because we've had a couple on the show now that have had sort of similar stories to you, where it's almost like a player. When you're younger, I do feel like sometimes players are more important than clubs, even. Like, you can't grasp the significance of the club, because no one, you know, you don't instantly know the history when you're a kid. But yet these players can sort of seem larger than life. So it's interesting that you're not the first one on the podcast to say something like that. Okay. You kind of touched on it a bit there. And we are going to get into the not so quick fire questions, but just who is your favorite player of all time? I wondered. We might as well hit that.
Yeah. I mean, of all time, it's got to be CR7 or Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right.
You know, when he's at Man United, he was just the dream player, really. He's dribbling in and out of players, scoring goals, setting the Premier League alight. And, you know, it was obviously a bit sad to see him go, but you still admire him. You still appreciate his game. And even when he went to Real Madrid, you know, he took La Liga by storm. He took the Champions League by storm. And he's just created such a name for himself where even the name CR7, you know, that's just some letters and numbers, but you instantly recognise who that is, because Ronaldo has been so prolific and so special on the football pitch. And for that reason, I'd argue he is one of the best players in the world, or one of the best players to have ever played a game. So for me personally, yeah, I'd say Cristiano Ronaldo, my favourite player.
Well, no one's going to be arguing with you there. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, to be fair, it's interesting that you mentioned Ronaldo, really, because, you know, I don't think it would be a particularly interesting original podcast if we talked about him over the last 10 years. I mean, what is there left to be said? He is he's just a phenomenon. He's probably the greatest. Now is not the time to have the debate as to whether he's the best player of all time. But my opinion is he's the best goal scorer of all time. And if I was to pick one player in history to score me a goal in a big game, he would win hands down. Just, I think his attitude and his ability to deliver on the big occasion under big pressure is quite simply the best. And I think not many people would argue with that, really. However, what I was going to say is, I think sometimes it's forgotten just how good he was in that period before he left Madrid at Manchester United. And in that team you had when you won the Champions League, Pippin Chelsea again, typical, in the final, really, with Tevez and Rooney sort of joining him in that front three. That was some of the best football I can remember seeing. And it was just electric, really. So, yeah, interesting that he's clearly still had massive impact on you.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, well, we'll sort of return to this season a little bit. And first of all, well, I'll ask you the question first, and then I'm going to throw some other potential answers at you. Who is your favourite current player?
All right, so current player, right now, there's quite a few players that I think most United fans could say, but I'd have to go for I'll go for Paul Pogba, simply because he's been at the club for a while, and yes, he's had inconsistencies. Yes, he's, you know, not performed at certain times, but as a player, as a midfielder, and as a key man in the squad, I think when he's playing, he's unstoppable sometimes, and you know, he's got dribbling abilities, he's got shooting abilities, pace, passing, strength, and at times he's sort of carried that team, you know, even before Bruno Fernandes came in, he's sort of had the team, you know, not on his back, but he sort of helped the team along. And I believe Ollie has built a team around him because he's so influential in the team. And obviously, you know, there's his, you know, personality outside of the game and his Instagram stories. And, you know, he's just a complete package. And I feel like Ollie has done the right decision to keep him, because on his day, he is such an influential player. But yeah, Paul Pogba for me.
Very interesting answer. I mean, I got to say, you know, I've done a few of these now, and sometimes I ask the question and I know the answer. Clubs, there's just such an obvious one club man who's just been the defining figure in that club. And I suppose the answer isn't that obvious at Manchester United because you've got so many sort of stars or potential names. But I did not expect Pogba, and I don't know why I didn't expect Pogba. I think my own opinion of him possibly clouded my judgment, because I disagree with you a little bit. I don't get me wrong. No one is denying the bloke's quality. And when he's at it, he is one of the top midfielders in the world. But I think he suffers from thinking he's better than he is. I don't think he's the best player in the Manchester United team anymore. And I actually think the interesting thing, and why you've done so well since January, is that I think he's better off when there's another star in the team. And that's why I think the dynamic between him and Fernandes has worked so well. Because what he is not, is he's not the player that's going to score 20 goals a season from midfield and get 20 assists. And that's not a criticism of him, because there's very few players that do that. And that's not his game. He plays slightly deeper. He's more of a starter of attacks than a finisher of them. I mean, you've sort of set that up perfectly then. So just sort of talk a bit about Fernandes and his impact on the team. And how excited are you about having Pogba and Fernandes potentially playing a whole season together next year?
Yeah, I think the stats speak for itself since Bruno Fernandes came in. I mean, just the amount of assists, his game in the middle of the park. And, you know, we've been missing that creative link. Like, obviously, I've said how Pogba kind of was relied upon in that role, and that's not necessarily his main game. So just to have that creative playmaker, sort of that cam, and passing those through balls into Greenwood or to Martial or to Rashford to then run on and, you know, score, it's been crucial for that second half of the season. And, you know, games where sort of we've had to dig deep and we've had to, you know, rely on quality, he's come through. And yeah, obviously I can't speak highly enough of next season, you know, Pogba and not just Bruno Fernandes, but Greenwood and say Rashford. And it's really exciting times for Manchester United fans, you know. Even if we get a couple of signings, you know, the link up potential for next season, it'll be something special. And hopefully, you know, we have the consistency to sort of push on and challenge those top two of Manchester City and Liverpool with the attacking force we have.
Yeah, absolutely. No, well said. I think, I think it's interesting. As a neutral, I think the big progression has been that I actually think you're just a much, much better team to watch nowadays. Because I actually think my main criticism of Solskjaer a few months ago, or even probably, to be fair, more last year, was that wasn't necessarily the results, but it's that the style of play to me wasn't actually that different to what United fans hated under Mourinho. It was still counter-attacking football. You still weren't, you know, zipping it around the pitch much. So I always wondered, why does he get away with it when Mourinho why Mourinho so obviously didn't. Having said that, in the last few months, a couple of games I've seen since restart in particular, going forward again, you know, with Fernandes, with Greenwood, with Rashford and Martial, as you're saying, you really do look a really exciting and an attacking team. And obviously, I mean, you'll know more about this than I do, but that's Manchester United, isn't it? That's the kind of ethos of the club.
It's the DNA. Yeah, it's the DNA.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, whilst we're talking about players, quick word on Mason Greenwood. How good is he and how good can he become?
Oh, he can... There's a lot of comparisons to him and Robin Van Persie. And you can see it in you know, the way he takes his shots, his confidence in front of goal. I can't wait. As long as he stays a United player and he keeps this consistency going, I can't wait until he, you know, reaches his peak level. And maybe, I know this is obviously a very big claim, but potential Ballon d'Or, I won't say winner, potential Ballon d'Or candidate. Because, you know, he's just such a special talent that it's hard to see him not being up there with the best, you know, like Mbappe or Haaland or those young players coming through. It's just, again, it's such exciting times for Manchester United fans.
Right. Wow. Yeah. No. I mean, you're not holding back on the phrase there. that shout could either 10 years time, mate. When he wins it, we'll replay that. No worries about that.
I was going to say winner, but I'll say candidate. I'll say candidate.
Yeah. Yeah. No. To be honest, I don't consider that outrageous bias. I agree with you. I think he is the thing that he's got that. Like that, because you know, there's a lot. Actually, we're lucky in England at the moment. There's a lot of talented young players for a change, and some of them are quite similar. But what I think he's got that I haven't seen anyone have in quite a long time is his finishing is unbelievable. And it's I really like the comparison with Van Persie because Van Persie had that finish where he just put his foot through the ball, and you know, with such consistency and such accuracy. And I think Greenwood seems to have got that. With both feet. And I mean, I don't want to make this the Mason Greenwood show, but do you think he'll end up playing through the middle? Because we're going to talk about potential transfer targets in a second. And I just wondered, with the players that have been rumoured to come in, will Greenwood long-term be playing, you know, up top on his own?
I don't think his best position is up top. I think he's comfortable on that right-hand side, you know, cutting it. So when sort of Wan-Bissaka comes on and helps him out, he loves getting the ball on the right-hand side and kind of dribbling inside. He looks menacing when he comes in from that right-hand side. So up top, I think it's the same kind of issues Rashford had because Rashford did start on that left-hand side and we did play him up top for a while. And it sort of worked until he had to kind of, you know, sort of like the number nine, like holding up the ball, a little bit of control on the ball and sort of passing it out to the wings and then getting into the box. It was tough for Rashford. So for Greenwood, I'd say probably not up front. It's a difficult one.
You know what? Fine. That's why I was interested to hear what you had to say. I'm not arguing anyway. I think he'll end up there. I just wondered because there is sort of that debate. Okay, so before we talk about the more exciting question, which is who might be coming into the club, let's put your Ole Gunnar Solskjaer hat on then. Who would you get rid of from the club? Who would be top of your to sell column?
Yeah, I think there's two very obvious answers here. You know, I feel sorry for him in a way, but, you know, based on previous performances, he has had it coming. And I will say Jesse Lingard, number one to go.
Yeah.
Number two, again, sort of performances have, you know, kind of merited this answer. And a lot of fans don't like him either. Andrés Pereira as well. I think they're two
really
players that are a bit, they're not up to standard. They're not, you know, top starting 11 quality, should we say. And I think those two would be the first to go. And then after that, I'd say it's a little bit difficult to kind of get rid of any players. Like, there's no aging or sort of underperforming players other than the two I've mentioned. So yeah, those are the first two that would go.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, don't get me wrong, Lingard. I mean, it's the most obvious shout of all time, isn't it? The bloke's become a joke, really. And I just think, I mean, I know what you say about feeling sorry for him, because part of me thinks whenever people turn footballers, professional footballers playing at the highest level, into a joke, part of me does think, yeah, but they have played at the top level, played in World Cups, scored in World Cups, you know, cut them a bit of slack. But at the same time, I think it's possibly a case of Lingard that he's just got ahead of himself, like focused too much on the stuff outside of the game, and didn't focus enough on just actually playing football. And he just looks bang average, just looks out of his depth.
Like, I remind you of the FA Cup final against Crystal Palace. You know, he scored the winner. And under Mourinho, he wasn't that bad.
No, he had a good season a couple of years ago.
But yeah, under Oli, he's just not lived up to expectations, really. It's really sad.
Yeah, absolutely. But the one that I didn't expect you to say as much is obviously Andreas Pereira. And the reason I say that is because there seemed for a little while before, certainly when Pogba was injured and probably before Fernandes came in, where he was sort of like for want of a better word, a mainstay of the side. So why do you think you want to get rid of him?
I think it's a bit of quality, isn't it? Like, we've not, especially in midfield as well, we've not had the best of quality recently. And that's why we've had to play the likes of Pereira, Lingard, Fred and Matic. And it's a bit, you know, it was a bit, you know, annoying at the time. But we've now invested in midfielders. So our starting 11, there's no way Pereira or Lingard could get into that starting lineup. And yeah, like you said, with Pereira, I think he's just not United quality anymore. You know, I just don't see how he's going to fit into the squad. I really don't. Sorry.
Fair enough, mate. No, fair enough. Okay, then. So as promised, on to the more exciting question. Who would be your top transfer target this summer?
Well, I think it's already happening as we speak. Jadon Sancho. He is number one priority, I'm sure, in United's books.
Yeah.
And what a player he is. I'd love to see him in a United shirt. Bit of a hefty price tag, not going to lie. I think the current bid that was rejected recently was 89 million, I think.
Yeah, that's what I saw today. Yeah. If that's the starting bid and that's getting rejected, that's going to be some money.
I'm not sure about the price tag, but I think if Jadon Sancho wants to push the move and come to United, I'd be happy, and it could come just under 100 million, just shy of 100 million. If all things go to plan, it could go, you know, over 120, 140, which, again, I don't think United would pursue that. No way would we pursue 140. But like I said, Jadon Sancho, number one target. Hopefully we get him this summer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, to be fair, it's one of those. Sometimes you get a sense for these transfer sort of sagas in advance. I think with other teams making signings, it kind of fell into place that United looks like the only place he is going to go, because I think it's pretty obvious he wants to come back to England. I don't see him going back to City. I think those bridges have been burned, and I'm not sure they sort of need him in the same way. They've got players in those positions. Chelsea have obviously splashed the cash on very similar players in those kind of positions, so that's not going to happen. And Liverpool obviously don't need him, and I don't think any other team can afford him. So it has fallen nicely into place. It's just, as you say, whether the negotiations can get over the line. Often when I ask this question, I've done a couple of the clubs in the lower divisions, and it's hard enough for them to predict one transfer target. But as you are Moneybags United, I'll give you one more go then. So is who would be second on your list? I'm interested, because I think Sancho would be first on quite a lot of people. So have you got another one?
Yeah, I think number two, we've been obviously crying out for centre-backs, and obviously Harry Maguire was a good purchase last summer. But I think a lot of teams obviously target this player, and I'd have to go with Koulibaly of Napoli.
Yeah.
I think he would just make our defence a lot better, and it's another player who would make the starting 11. I think that's one of the key facts that we need to get right in the transfer window, is we need to buy players that would, you know, that would get in the starting 11. You know, they need to be on the ball and they need to be ready to go come the start of the season. And I'd happily think that Koulibaly would make that. I think he's a cracking defender, and him and Maguire would be a partnership to dream for, really. So Koulibaly is my second sign.
Yeah, you wouldn't lose a bloody header, would you? No, Jesus.
Every corner I expect a goal.
Every corner, yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, absolutely. That's one, as we were obviously just talking about, I think that you've sort of cornered the market on Sancho. Koulibaly is more interesting because I think there's a number of teams linked with him. I think City are potentially keen. And it's a strange one as well, because it feels like he's been linked forever with Premier League clubs, and no one's sort of gone in for him just yet. And you do wonder if it's sort of this summer is the right time. So it will be interesting to see where he ends up at, if anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's been really, really interesting. We'll go broader now. And I'm just interested to know, what is your favourite United match of all time?
Of all time? I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say this one, George, but 2007-2008 Champions League final. I can't really knock it. That night in Moscow. Yeah, it was a nerve-wracking match, I'll tell you that. I was only, in secondary school at the time, I believe, and you know, watching it with my two brothers, and honestly, the whole match, you know, it was on a knife edge. You know, first Ronaldo gets that header in, goes 1-0 up, and then Frank Lampard gets the equaliser to make it 1-1, and then sort of Drogba has that moment where he lashes out Vidic and gets a red card, and it was just a crazy match. And then to go down to penalties, where, you know, you've got Ronaldo. Oh, he's in the form of his life. Puts the ball down, and Cech saves it. And I was, you know, head in hand. I was like, oh, this can't be happening. And then obviously, you know, the moment where Chelsea fans, they just closed their eyes. You know, John Terry. Honestly, I've never screamed and shouted so much before that moment. And to see, you know, Edwin van der Sar pull off that save after John Terry slipped. Boy, yeah, I was just so, so ecstatic. Because obviously, you know, I wasn't old enough to witness the treble winning team. So
yeah,
to see it, you know, on TV winning the Champions League final, yeah, it was just incredible for me. So that's the game for me.
Right, Michael, thanks very much. That's the end of the podcast. No, I'm joking. No, mate, I completely agree with you. I think when it comes to, you know, people's favourite matches, I think, you know, we've seen this season with how much the Premier League means to Liverpool fans, for example. And I don't get me wrong, I think that, you know, winning the Premier League is amazing. But I do think that in terms of moments and matches you remember, nothing beats the Champions League for sheer drama. And if you are a club that's been fortunate enough to play in the knockout rounds, and even if you don't win it, I mean, we're both lucky enough to have had clubs that have won it during our lifetimes. But even, you know, I'm talking Leicester or even Spurs in Harry Redknapp's days, even those teams, those games in the Champions League are the ones that really stick out in memory. And it's funny, actually, that you mentioned that final, because, and this is a recommendation to the listeners as well, I've been reading a book called The Mixer, which is sort of a history, or it runs through the evolution of tactics during the Premier League era. And it focuses very specifically on that final and the penalty shootout and the sort of mind games that were being played. So, I won't spoil it. I won't go into much detail, but do look that up if you're a fan of fan of football books, because it, yeah, I remember it just as clearly as you do, but obviously for the wrong reasons. And Anelka taking that rubbish penalty, just a rubbish, easy to say penalty. Van der Sar could have headed it away. It was just a nothing penalty. But I have to say, hindsight's a funny thing, and I would concede that it would have been a real, real shame if that team that you'd had in 2008 hadn't won the Champions League. I think, you know, it was one of the great. I think Ferguson said that was his best team, which is really saying something.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So no, absolutely. I think you probably, and it, well, thankfully we won it a few years later, so I'm not bitter enough to say that you didn't deserve it that year. Okay, Mike. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for coming. And I think for the listeners, obviously, this is the second part of our double episode week. I'm sure I'll have another episode set up in the coming days and maybe on Spotify and other platforms by next week. As always, do get in touch if you want to talk about your club. Everyone that's come on obviously has an amazing time. There's nothing like talking about your own football team for half an hour. so I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Also, a shout out to people listening in America. Would love to hear from you as something different. It'd be interesting to get the viewpoint of a fan of an English team or even an American team from across the pond. So yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Thanks again, Mike.
No problem.
And cheers. I'll speak to you all soon.